Okay, so just a brief overview of the story of Israel journeying through the wilderness begins, of course, with the Exodus experience. God miraculously led his people out of Egypt. They were captive in bondage, and there was no doubt that God's hand was guiding them. There were miracles to the left and the right. There were plagues that had fallen, and God had delivered them through this Red Sea experience and had defeated the armies of Egypt and Pharaoh. There they stood on the banks of the Red Sea and sang prophetically the Song of Moses. What a high moment for God's people. And he was promising to lead them to this land of Canaan, which they began their journey. Well, along the journey, it wasn't such a smooth path. They did not have an easy road in front of them. And of course, God intended all of that. And right away, in Exodus 15, you see them very thirsty. And they came to some waters, and they drank the waters, and they were bitter. And that was hard. That was a hard little trial that they had. They complained about that. And God was very good to them and turned that water sweet. In the very next chapter, they began to complain more because they were afraid that their food was going to run out. Now, mind you, the food had not run out yet, but they saw it coming with their own perception. They said, we only see trouble heading into this wilderness. There's too many of us. There's not enough food. We don't have our crops planted probably. And they began to turn to Moses and say, why have you brought us out of Egypt? Did you bring us to kill us? So it wasn't many days that they began to accuse Moses of conspiracy, that he was going to bring them out of Egypt and kill them all and steal whatever they had. And this was the accusation that I'm sure was very hard for Moses to hear. And Moses' reply, very important to what we're going to be studying today, he said, who are we? Speaking of him and his brother Aaron. Your murmurings are not against us, but they're against who? Against God. God is leading us. I mean, we have a pillar of fire. We have a cloud by day guiding our path. It's not me leading you. It's God leading you. And he's leading us. And yes, there are trials along the way, but let's trust him because he's given us his promise that he's leading us in the right way. Exodus chapter 17, in Rephidim, they ran out of water and they complained bitterly. Again, they said the same thing. Did you bring us out of Egypt to kill us? And so this is a very important moment where God spoke to Moses and told him to smite the rock. Take the rod that you used to part the Red Sea and smite the rock, and water would come forth, and that is exactly what it did. And it replenished and refreshed all of Israel and their livestock that they had. And they were very, very thankful. They journeyed on. They got the Ten Commandments at Mount Sinai. But it wasn't too long after that they again fell at the worship of the golden calf. Total apostasy. There was some that rebelled and were judgment was passed on them. Others repented and were reconciled to God. The commandments were renewed again, and they began their journey again. And God wanted to lead them straight to the land of Canaan. And they were journeying there, but there were some more trials ahead. And they began to complain again. Now we're in the book of Numbers. In chapter 11, they complain that they were going to run out of food. And God gave them quails. And due to their lust, you know, a plague hit them, and many died on that plague. But Canaan was not too far away. They decided to send out spies, and they did send out these 12 spies in Numbers 14. And the spies came back after looking at the land that God had promised to them, and they gave an evil report. They said, we shouldn't even try. Canaan is too fortified. The walls are thick. The people are large and strong. And we will get wiped out if we try to attack. And so the people were very discouraged, and they looked at Moses and they said, why have you brought us out here again? You know, there's this theme. But two of the spies, Joshua and Caleb, they gave a good report, but yet the people would not listen to that good report, a report of faith that they should move forward. And they decided that they would not move forward. And so God pronounced a judgment upon them of 40 years in the wilderness. He said, any of your men that are 20 years or older are going to die in the wilderness. And that was actually gracious because there was a I don't know if it's a threat, but God had intended to wipe out all of Israel and start afresh with Moses. And Moses interceded, playing the part of Christ, interceding for Israel that their lives would be spared, so the judgment was reduced to just those 20 and above would die in the wilderness, but the young generation would have an opportunity to go into Canaan, and there was a promise that they would go into Canaan. Well, if you were 20 and older, that might be a bit of a hard judgment, and that's exactly what it was. And there was a man there named Korah, who was a leader, one of the leaders there in Israel, and he was quite offended by that kind of judgment. He didn't think it was quite fair that they wouldn't be allowed to go into Canaan. And he started to surmise against Moses and Aaron. And Korah, Dathan, and Abiram began a conspiracy. And it was so scary that's a whole another story there. But all of Israel was almost wiped out. Almost every single person was caught into that conspiracy. And it was only the grace of God that they were not all wiped out. So Israel was having a challenging time, trusting in the leadership God had appointed, and trusting in the promise of this land of Canaan that would be given to them. So, well, God clearly establishes Moses and Aaron as the leaders through that, after that rebellion was squashed in Numbers chapter 16, and God's people were allowed to wander. It was 40 years that they would wander. But he was preparing them, and his plan was that the next generation was going to go and receive the promise and go into the land of Canaan. So notice the statement from Patriarchs and Prophets. It says, the wilderness wandering was not only ordained as a judgment upon the rebels and the murmurers, but notice it was to serve as a discipline for the rising generation, preparatory to their entrance into the promised land. So God's people were not quite yet ready. They were not spiritually ready to trust in God's promises, to believe in Him, and to move forward in faith to receive the promised land. So they had to walk 40 years. And during that 40 year, God was preparing them. What's kind of interesting also is that Moses also spent 40 years in the wilderness, not far from there, and that helped prepare him. He was prideful. He was wanting to do everything on his own power, and he had to unlearn many things in 40 years. And God had this 40-year period for God's people to learn of him and to learn to trust him through the trials that they would face so that they could fully just move forward in faith, not trusting in self, but trusting in the power of God. And so he was preparing the new rising generation to receive the promise of the inheritance. The Bible does not speak too much of those 40 years. There's just a few little stories, but it's not highlighted very much. But you see, in Numbers chapter 20, and if you will turn there with me, we're kind of caught up now to Numbers chapter 20. The 40 years was about ended. And of course, Israel knew that. And so there was hope. There was anticipation. There was prophecy that was about to be fulfilled, that they were going to receive the inheritance. But, you know, God could not just easily give Israel this new inheritance without them also enduring some tests, proving themselves, and showing that they also, that they could, not also, but that they could trust and have faith in God's promises and not fall to the similar unbelief of the previous generation. And so Numbers 20, verse 1, it says, then the children of Israel, the whole congregation, came into the wilderness of Zin in the first month, and the people stayed in Kadesh, and Miriam died there and was buried there. Now, there was no water for the congregation, so they gathered together against Moses and Aaron. All right, so Israel was on the move northward, and they had kind of settled in this area, and they were so close to Canaan they could see the tops, the hilltops. Okay, so it was visibly in sight. They were only a few days away. They needed to pass through this territory of Edom. And God had given them a promise. And if you want to keep your finger in Numbers 20, turn to Deuteronomy with me, chapter 2. And in Deuteronomy chapter 2, it outlines exactly what God was going to do for Israel with a little bit more detail. Of course, this beginning of Deuteronomy is kind of Deuteronomy is reflecting on the history of Israel and their wanderings. And we'll just pick it up here in verse 2, Deuteronomy 2, verse 2. And the Lord spake unto me, saying, you have compassed this mountain long enough. Turn northward. In other words, the, the 39th year, and it was fulfilled. It was time to start moving towards Canaan. They had been wandering long enough. And speaking to Moses, the Lord said, "And command the people, you are about to pass through the territory of your brethren, the descendants of Esau, who live in Seir, and they will be afraid of you. Therefore, watch yourselves carefully. Do not meddle with them, for I will not give you any of their land. No, not so much as one footstep, because I have given Mount Seir to Esau as a possession." But notice verse 6, very importantly, "You shall buy food from them with money that you may eat, and you shall buy water from them with money that you may drink." These were words given to Moses to give to the people, which he gave, and he said, "God is telling us we've journeyed long enough. It is time for us to move northward. And we're going to pass through Edom, but God's not going to give us the land of Edom. That's for the descendants of Esau." He promised that to them, and he's going to fulfill that promise. "We're just going to peacefully pass through. And sure, we don't have enough water with us, but we are going to be buying water along the way. We are going to be buying food and paying for it. We're not going to steal. We're not going to be in warfare. We're just going to pass through, treat them right, treat them fair. And we're not settling in Edom. We're going to Canaan." That was the plan. That was communicated to Israel. Prophecy was about to be fulfilled. There was pretty clear description of how it was going to be and what they should do and how they should survive. So here they are, they see the hills, they're about ready to journey, and what happens? Well, the water turned off. Yeah, well, the water came dry. Now, interestingly, 40 years previously when they complained of water in Horeb and Moses hit the rock, water came out, and they didn't only stay in Horeb for 40 years, they wandered many different places, and God always provided water for them. During the whole 40 years, wherever they were, they could find a hillside and water would always be found coming out of a rock. So the promise of water was being fulfilled continually for 40 years. But now, suddenly, after 40 years, the water ran dry. How should they have responded to that? It's interesting, the water running dry was allowed by God. And it was actually a positive sign. They should have said, "Hey, hallelujah, the waters run dry. We are no longer going to be wandering in the wilderness. It is time to move. And God has showed us how we're going to get there. Let us move forward." But instead, they look at the water running dry, and immediately, here we are back in Numbers 20, immediately they gather themselves together against Moses. How can they do that? Now, just put yourself in the place of Moses. He was 120 years old. I mean, he was an older man. I mean, he wanted to go to Canaan 40 years ago, and he was ready. But because of their murmuring and complaining, he saw that God was not going to let them go in. And now there was 40 years of preparation. And now was the moment. Prophecy was about to be fulfilled with this generation. And this was his last chance. And I'm sure he must have thought, "Oh, no. If we go through this again, God's not going to let us into Canaan. We're never going to get into Canaan." It must have been very, very heavy on him. Let's read verse 3. "And the people contended with Moses and spoke, saying, 'If only we had died when our brother had died before the Lord.'" Wow. And that's in reference to the judgment on Korah, Dathan, and Abiram, and those that were along with that conspiracy. They were struck dead. And now they're saying, "Oh, we should have just died 40 years ago. What have we done? Why are we wasting ourselves? Why are we wasting our time here? And why have you brought us out here?" Verse 4. "Why have you brought up the assembly of the Lord into the wilderness, that we and our animals should die here? And why have you made us come up out of Egypt and bring us to this evil place? It is not a place of grain or figs or vines or pomegranates, nor is there any water to drink." Oh, they're complaining. Didn't they? Haven't they read the testimonies? So Moses and Aaron, they went from the presence of the assembly to the door of the tabernacle of meeting, and they fell on their faces, and the glory of the Lord appeared unto them. Well, they did the right thing. They went to God. They did what the children of Israel should have done. They should have gone with their concerns to God. They should have lifted prayers to him and asked for guidance and said, is this the sign? Are we to move? Well, they already knew that. They just needed to trust in him and move forward. Well, you can imagine the frustration of Moses. How can they complain like that? And you can read the story and you can just easily think, what a bunch of complainers. What a bunch of fools. I mean, didn't they hear what God had said? Hadn't they seen the providence of God in their lives? Are they still, after 40 years, going to doubt? And will they fail like the previous generation? Verse 7. So the Lord spoke to Moses, and he said, take the rod. So again it was to take the rod. You and your brother Aaron, gather the congregation together. And notice carefully, speak to the rock. Speak to the rock before their eyes, and it will yield its water. Thus you shall bring water for them out of the rock, and give drink to the congregation and their animals. So Moses did it. He took the rod from before the Lord, as he commanded, and Moses and Aaron did what the Lord said, gathered the assembly together before the rock, and he said to them, hear now, you rebels. Must we bring water for you out of this rock? And Moses lifted up his hand and he struck the rock twice. Boom, boom. And, well, God is so good. The next part is amazing. You know, if I was the Lord there, I don't think any water would be coming out. The Lord is much better than me. Water comes gushing out of the rock. Okay. All right. Water comes out with abundance, and the congregation and the animals drank. They were refreshed. But then, verse 12. Then the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron, because you did not believe me to hallow me in the eyes of the children of Israel, therefore you shall not bring this assembly into the land which I have given to them. That was it. That was the only really, you know, in the wilderness journeyings, the only really fault spoken of Moses. Of course, he made a lot of mistakes in his life. He murdered a man back in Israel. He wasn't without fault in his life, but he was a very consecrated person. He was the greatest of prophets. He was committed to God, full of faith, ready to move forward. His sin was not lacking faith. His sin was something a little different here. And it seems kind of small, and if you breeze through it kind of quick, you might not even catch what he did. But did God tell him to rebuke Israel? No. His words, hear now, you rebels, were his own words. Now, interestingly, God had told him to give that message in the past, and he said basically the exact same words. But in that case, God had told him to say, give that message to Israel. In this case, he went forward on his own. And in here, did God say to hit the rock? No, he was only to do what? Speak to the rock. You see, Moses' frustration had boiled over. He was frustrated. He was human, and he had fallen. His human nature had taken over. He was frustrated. He was wearied. He was disheartened that this generation would also not receive the promise and enter into the land of Canaan because of their unbelief. So he took matters into his own hands. Moses, this is from Patriarchs and Prophets, Moses had spoken from irritated feeling. His words were an expression of human passion rather than of holy indignation because God had been dishonored. See, before when he had given that message, there was love in his voice. He didn't want to give that message. It was a burden for him to give that message. But here, he went ahead and he was chastising Israel. Hear now, you rebels, he said. This accusation was true. But even truth is not to be spoken in passion or impatience. Patriarchs and Prophets, page 417. Is it important how you say the truth? He's speaking the truth. And sometimes we can get caught up in that. I'm just telling the truth. I'm just telling it like it is. But it can be sin, not because it's not truth, because you're not speaking it in love. If human passion is stirring you, and if self is rising up, God is not in that. And so it's not only important to speak the truth, but to speak the truth when we should speak the truth, and to speak the truth in love. Very, very important. Moses fell on that point because he allowed himself to get frustrated. When he took it upon himself to accuse them, he grieved the Spirit of God and wrought only harm to the people. His lack of patience and self-control was evident. In other words, people could see he lost his cool. Thus the people were given an occasion to question whether his past course had been under the direction of God, and to excuse their own sin. Oh, Moses had made a big mistake now. And as leaders, the eye is on you. And mistakes of leaders can have a much bigger impact than others. And so now they had an excuse. Yeah, see, he's been leading us. See, he's the one. He says, must I get this water for you? And now, I thought what happened to our complaints aren't to you, it's to God. So now their complaint starts. He gave them evidence to complain now. From page 418, it says, "More than this, Moses and Aaron had assumed power that belonged only to God. When he cried out, 'Must we fetch water out of this rock?' they put themselves in the place of God, as though the power laid in themselves, men possessing human frailties and passions to bring this water for them." Moses had made a very big mistake. You know, and if Moses and Aaron had handled this another trial patiently, with faith and peace and love, they would have been able to quell the murmuring. It was actually within their reach to do that. And they would have been able to enter into Canaan. But the judgment was that because Moses did that, he wasn't going to be able to allow to be go in. And it seemed, it could seem kind of harsh, but it's like, Moses was a pretty faithful guy. I mean, he was more faithful than everybody else. And it's not like they were right or anything. They were all very wrong and guilty. Why Moses? Moses? God had a reason for that. By his rash action or act, Moses took away the force of the lesson that God purposed to teach. The rock being a symbol of Christ had been once smitten, as Christ was to be once offered. The second time it was needful only to speak to the rock, as we only have to ask for blessings in the name of Jesus. By the second smiting of the rock, the significance of this beautiful figure of Christ was destroyed. Christ was the rock. Christ was the living water. Christ was the Redeemer. Christ was all their hope. And that rock was smitten once, and Jesus was bruised for our iniquities. But he was only to be bruised once. And after that, we can just talk to him. We can speak to the rock. So when the trials come and the concerns come, we should speak to the rock. Christ is there, a firm foundation, a rock well able to hear our prayers and to help us through any challenges that we face. Moses was to speak to the rock, and God was going to answer those prayers, and water was just going to come forth. But the fact that he hit the rock even twice and yelled at the people, what God wanted to accomplish in that whole service was destroyed. And now all the reproof fell on the leaders. Suddenly Moses realized, what have I done? The Lord brought him aside, and he didn't rebuke him in front of the congregation. He brought him aside, him and Aaron, and he told them the consequence. Yeah, I still love you, Moses. I still love you, Aaron. But this is what you've done. And Moses and Aaron, they repented sincerely. Let's look at the statement here, 4:19. They were not charged with willful or deliberate sin. They had been overcome by a sudden temptation, and their contrition was immediate and heartfelt. And the Lord accepted their repentance. Though, because of the harm their sin might do among the people, he could not remit its punishment. So God loved Moses and Aaron, and he embraced them and forgave them, and they were reunited, and the relationship was great, restored, it was okay. Oh, but still, you can't go to Canaan. Oh. That was the hope of Moses all that time. I mean, all this past, his almost his whole life, that was his dream. I mean, he was to be the deliverer of Israel, to bring Israel into Canaan. And now, because of one moment of losing his temper, he didn't deliberately do it. It wasn't willful. He just got caught off guard. He got caught off guard. He said the wrong thing. God forbidding Moses to enter Canaan was unmistakable evidence that God was the leader and not Moses. And that needed to be made very clear. Because that was part of the confusion in Israel. Why are you bringing us out here? Right? So Moses could not go in. God needed to clearly establish himself as leader of Israel and not any man. God is no respecter of persons. And he was going to treat Moses as needed to be treated. He couldn't have special favoritism to Moses. If God did show favoritism to Moses and take back the consequences of his sin, it would have had bad impact on the children of Israel. Oh, okay. It's okay for him. Yeah. So Moses then had to go in front of Israel and announce the punishment. It's like, I want to have a word with everybody. I'm not going to be going to Canaan, but you're going to be going. Yeah. And that itself, I'm sure, had a big impact on their hearts. Because they knew they were guilty. They had to know they were guilty. And he was the one faithful all this time. Okay, he didn't say something too nice to us, but, you know, you should probably, I'm sure most of them thought, you know, you can come with us. Now he's like, no, I'm not going. And neither is Aaron. You know, God is going to lead you in there. Trust in him. Have faith in him. He's going to lead you through. And so that was the message. And that's part of this story. The history of Israel was to be placed on record for the instruction and the warning of coming generations. So all this, I like to study into this story so much because it so much parallels the experience of God's remnant church. And God is preparing this generation to enter into the heavenly land of Canaan. And we end up, you know, with a lot of the same issues that Israel had. And so let's just review a few lessons from Numbers chapter 20 and ask that God would bless us and instruct us and encourage us. So in this story, we see something. We see a very important lesson here that we need to learn to trust God through the trials that we face. It's very easy to read the story and think these guys are a bunch of fools. But do we ever go through trials? Now you have to realize, if you're in a wilderness where there is no food and you don't seem to have enough food with you, it's not just a small thing. I mean, they were probably right. If there was not some miraculous intervention, they probably were going to die and their children. So their life was kind of at stake there. And so, yeah, it wasn't like, I'm a little hungry here. You know, it's like, no, are we all going to die? So, and we can't live without water. So they're really speaking for their lives. What kind of trials do we go through? God used those trials, and the purpose of those trials, he allowed them to be a little hungry. He allowed them to be a little thirsty because he was exercising their faith. He was proving them and helping to develop their faith. So the trials, just because we are children of God, even, no matter how much we have surrendered our lives to God, does that mean you're not going to have trials? That's not the promise. I don't see that promise in Scripture that God's people will not go through any trials. We will go through trials. Do apparently like bad things happen to good people? Yes. There's examples all around us. We go through these experiences. God allows those trials to come to us, but there's always a purpose in it. There was a purpose through every single trial that they went through, and God could see the end from the beginning, and he's like, I'm going to develop them here. They're going to start to learn to trust me. And so that when they went into Canaan, and really they could only go against the enemies in Canaan if they had full faith in him. Because it was probably true. Without God, they would have gotten totally wiped out by the Canaanites. They really weren't a match. It was only through the power of God. And so they needed to have greater faith there. So he gave them little trials. He's like, well, at least can you trust me with some water? Because you're going to be going against an army in the future. Can you trust me with this water situation? Can you trust me with this food situation? I know you're a little uncomfortable. I know this is hard. But I'm preparing you because actually harder things are coming. And you need to be able to trust in me completely. Maybe it's a sickness. And I know probably some here are going through trials right now. Why do sicknesses happen? And sicknesses happen to people sometimes and close friends of mine that are careful. You know, they're very careful. They try to live as healthy as they can. And a sickness comes and you think, wow, how can that happen? We went through an experience a few months ago here in Brazil. Our youngest daughter here got very sick. I honestly think she was hours from being dead. We had to rush her to the hospital. She was almost lifeless. She had to be quickly put on an IV. She wouldn't have made it the end of the day. Yeah, it was frightening. Yeah. Your child is in your arms, almost lifeless. You know, is there going to be traffic? Are we going to get there in time? I mean, you start praying sincerely. If my child dies, am I ready to handle that spiritually? Right? And am I ready right now to not complain and ask why? You know, can I maintain peace and not even get upset or nothing? You know, just say I'm so yielded to Christ. It's hard, you know, it's intense praying. God, help me to learn to trust you through the small trials and the bigger ones. We have to believe that God is with us through the trials. We have to believe that he's holding our hand, even if it's so challenging that it seems like he's even forsaken you. Let us not forget the experiences Christ went through. He thought his Father had forsaken him. I mean, he was completely in the darkness. He went through the deeper trials than any of us could possibly imagine. But there was a promise in front of him. As with us, Lord, help us to learn to trust in you through the trials that we face. Help us to not question you as God's people were questioning in these stories here. Help us to never question God's goodness or question that he doesn't love us or that he's turned his back on us. Even though it may not seem fair, things are going to happen in our lives that don't seem fair. And God wants us to place our trust in him and just give it to him and say, Lord, I can't take this on my own. Yeah, help me to put my trust fully in you. This is a strong lesson from this story here. Trusting God through the trials that we face. Another lesson that we see in the story is that God loves humility. And he does not like self-exaltation. Okay? The spirit that Moses had there was not the right spirit. God does not want to see that amongst his people. Rising up, the spirit of exaltation, the disposition to censure our brethren is displeasing to God. Those who indulge in these evils cast doubt upon the work of God. Because we're not treating each other well. So it's like, is God even in this movement? Look at the way you all treat each other. Those who indulge in these evils cast doubt upon the work of God and give the skeptical an excuse for their unbelief, just as that happened with Moses. Because of what he said, now they could start questioning. The more important one's position and the greater his influence, the greater is the necessity that he should cultivate patience and humility. So if leaders, though they have the job to lead, but they have to lead with humility and patience. If we take glory to ourselves, Satan exalts. That's what he wants. Oh, see, he's just like me. Because Satan, that's Satan's character, to exalt. Another really strong lesson is that no sin can be excused. And We saw that with Moses, and, you know, humanly speaking, I know we rationalize and we think that we can excuse things, and especially with Moses' sins. Notice the statement here. It says, Moses was not guilty of a great crime, as men would view the matter. His sin was one of a common occurrence. Lord have mercy. The psalmist says that he spake unadvisedly with his lips. That was a great sin of Moses. He lost his temper. He allowed emotions to control, and he said something he shouldn't have said. Has that ever happened to anybody here? For some of us, it happens every other day. This happened once. Okay? And Moses was not allowed to enter into Canaan. Sin cannot be excused. And if anyone could say an excuse or that he was tempted, you know, these people provoked me. Because we say that, well, I got upset because they did this, because they said something to me. They didn't say the wrong thing, so I got upset. If anybody had an excuse for getting upset, it was probably Moses. I mean, he had waited 40 years for this, and they had just tempted him continually to lose his patience. Of course, they were tempting God. To human judgment, this may seem a light thing, but if God dealt so severely with this sin in his most faithful and honored servant, he will not excuse it in others. There is no excuse. There is no excuse for us. All who profess godliness are under the most sacred obligation to guard the spirit and to exercise self-control, even under the greatest provocation. Does anyone ever provoke you? Does anyone ever say something you don't like? Do we get stirred up? Send prayers. Lord, help me to not retaliate, defend myself, say something I shouldn't say. Help me to be calm. Help me to trust in you. Sometimes it's going to be much better to keep our mouths closed. The strongest temptation cannot excuse sin. However great the pressure brought to bear upon the soul, transgression is our own act. It is not in the power of earth or hell to compel anyone to do evil. Satan attacks us at our weak points, but we need not be overcome. However severe or unexpected the assault, God has provided help for us, and in his strength we may conquer. We will be poorly treated. We will be abused. Prophetically, the government is going to not treat us well, is not going to treat us fairly. We could be in courts, and it could be a sham. But we can't lose our patience to that. But how easy would that be? I'm not being treated right. This is not fair. We cannot excuse, sin cannot be excused because of the being provoked. We can hold to the promise of 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 13. There is no temptation that hath taken you, but such is common to man. But God is able, right? He is able to give us victory, to find a way of escape, to get out of that temptation. He's not going to bring a temptation our way that we cannot conquer in his strength. But in our strength, absolutely impossible. Human nature is too strong. So we have to be yielded to God moment by moment. And that is the final lesson I just wanted to bring out here, that we need to maintain a constant connection with God. If we want to maintain peace through times of trial, we have to be connected with God. If we want to maintain peace by being provoked by others or by our spouse, we have to be connected with God. It's our responsibility to yield ourselves to God. God has the responsibility of working the power through us, but we must yield to Him. There is not an impulse in our nature, not a faculty of the mind or an inclination of the heart, but needs to be moment by moment under the control of the Spirit of God. We are not safe for a moment. Moses was, this man was very connected with God, and he handled so many temptations. There's just one time he just was off guard. I don't know how his morning went that day, you know, or what all led up to it, but he just was caught off guard. And the greatest, a prophet like Moses, a man that spiritual and connected, just being off guard for a moment, his human nature could spring up. we need a constant connection with God. Last statement. However great one's spiritual light, however much he may enjoy in the divine favor and blessing, he should ever walk humbly before the Lord, pleading in faith that God will direct every thought and control every impulse. We can only have that experience if we are connected. So Paul says, pray without ceasing. As the morning comes, we should approach God in prayer and song and study. And through the day, continue our prayers up. Lord, help me. When the temptation comes, Lord, help me. Because they're coming. And our journey towards Canaan is going to be filled with obstacles and trials, afflictions. But God promises to hold our hand through it. He is bringing us to the heavenly land of Canaan, a much better place than the earthly land of Canaan. We will have big obstacles in the future. The challenges we face now have a purpose to strengthen us, strengthen our faith in God, that we will trust Him more fully. And when we are in a position where we trust God through any trial, now He can just pour His Spirit on us. Of course, we need His Spirit to trust through those trials, but He can bring us on to meet greater obstacles in our lives. God wants to do great things with this generation. And thankfully, and miraculously, He did lead them into Canaan. Even with all their mistakes and failings, they finally got there. And that's just a great rest of the story. Even without Moses and Aaron at their side, Joshua and Caleb helped lead the charge. And they were so, humanly speaking, so concerned about what was up against them. It seemed daunting. It seemed impossible. But when they got there at some of these battles, it was just like there wasn't even anything. They just walked right through some of these armies. And they looked back and they thought, wow, that was easy. It's because God had done it. You know, God was just clearing the way for them. All right, so maybe somebody this morning wants to make a commitment to Christ before we have prayer. If you want to, maybe you've been going through a trial, and I know we all are going through trials, but maybe there's something particular that we're going through, and we just need help, some spiritual strength and commitment to God. Lord, help me get through this trial. Lord, help me to not doubt Your goodness through this trial. Lord, help me to place myself fully in Your hands. Just raise your hand and say, Lord, I need Your help. Please help me to yield my life to You and trust You through the trials that we are facing.